This is Phil Farron, and I am walking around, and I'm actually doing kind of an experiment here. This is take two. I recorded this morning and did, because I had breakfast with a friend, and so I recorded the podcast as I was coming back home, and it was going to be a regular driving home podcast. Well, I got to this afternoon, which is Thursday. I had just gotten off work. And I got to this afternoon, and I went to look at it, and turns out 4 minutes in, it just went to static. And I'm like, oh. But it is a glorious day. It is windy, but it is a glorious day, and I have the dead kitten on this, and hopefully that will be fine, and hopefully the recorder will work this time. I did clean off a bunch of old files and do a test, and it seemed to be okay, but it was good for the first 3 or 4 minutes this morning, so we'll see. I am running a backup using the voice recorder on my phone in my pocket. I have no idea how that's going to do with the wind, with as much wind as there is, but we'll just see. So we're going to run two recorders at the same time, and maybe we'll get a recording out of one of them. It's going to be kind of sad if this little PCM recorder that I bought just not too long ago has some kind of a problem. I'm hoping it was just like out of memory or something, but we'll see. Anyway, so got a little bit of time before I have to run around and shuffle some cars and do some things. We'll try to get this done before that, and hopefully we'll get a good recording this time. So, take two. So it's been a really interesting week. Lots of exciting things going on. Dustin now has his paramedic licenses and all that kind of stuff. He's been in class. Wow, there's a lot of wind. I have no idea how this is going to turn out. So I mentioned last week that has all his licensing and everything under control now. And this week was the week when he was doing onboarding. So he's been doing that all week, and he has to start into, I think maybe it is called boarding, where he has a paramedic with him, and then he's doing the jobs and all that kind of stuff, and the paramedic is just sort of watching over him. But that'll go fine. You know, he's already been through a lot of that stuff. So it's an exciting time, you know, big transition for him. And he's worked hard to get to this point, and so good for him. Yay, all is well. So we're going to have a few little extra childcare responsibilities over the next, I think it's 4 weeks or so, because he'll have his regular shifts, and then he'll have these extra shifts he'll have to do with a paramedic kind of watching over things. So, you know, it should all be fine. The writing and the costuming have kind of been competing with each other for time, because I'm on a crunch on both, but I'm on less of a crunch with the writing than I am with the costumes, because I have lots to do for Mario Day. But I did get the head all finished up structurally, so I just have a few things to glue on it, and it's ready to go. And then I still have to build the body. But I'm started on that, because as I mentioned before, it's just a sphere, because Mario is round, and then some cylinders. And so I've got those built, and I've pretty much got the cylinders for the legs worked out. You know, because they'll fit up inside the body so I can get it on, and then they'll stretch out and pretty much know what I'm doing there. And then the arms are smaller cylinders, but I'm getting them mounted on the side of the sphere so that the arm can kind of go up and down a little bit. And then I have to build a shoulder assembly. Just kind of smooth that out, but I think I know what I'm doing there. And then I have fabric for both the red and the blue. So I think I know what I'm going to do there. I think I've got real thin EVA foam. And I think what I'm going to do is cut pieces out that will form to the cylinders and the sphere, smaller pieces, then mount the fabric on those, and then mount those to the actual sphere to kind of smooth everything down a little bit and keep me from having to just take one piece of fabric and try to drape it and pin it around, you know, all of it. So we'll see, step at a time. This is always a little exciting. I am down to 2 weeks away now, so yeah. But, you know, God's good. A lot of times I'm just like, how am I going to get this done? But then you just take one step, and then you take another step, and then it's like, oh, wait, I could do that. Oh, yeah, I could do that. So, you know, that's going good. The writing is going fine. I'm just not dedicating as much time to it as I would normally at this stage. But I'm at 138,000 words now, and the books usually go to 150, 155. It feels like the book is going to drop in somewhere around there. I'm getting ready to, well, I'm finishing up chapter 29, getting ready to start chapter 30. Usually there's only about 31, 32 chapters in the book, and I've got a couple of epilogues to write. One of them's easy. The other one's a little more extended, but, you know, got some things to wrap up in the series and future casting and all that sort of thing. So I was slowed down a little bit on the writing this last week because I had to do a bunch of research. Obviously, in Revelation 20, where it talks about the millennial reign of Jesus Christ, it says that Satan is released at the end of the millennium, and then he goes about and deceives many nations, and, you know, he leads them all, and he encircles Jerusalem, you know, for the great kind of final battle. So since I'm writing it to scripture, I mean, I have to do that. So that means I need to kind of find places in the geography of Jerusalem and the surrounding areas that will anchor into certain story plot lines. And so that took a little bit of research, but, you know, there's, Jerusalem is fascinating. Its location is really, really fascinating. And just the physicality of Jerusalem is, it's pretty cool. So got all that research done, and you have to make space for, like, the important scenes to wrap things up. You know, you have to find things that resolve in satisfying ways. So, so all that's fun. There will be some kind of open-ended things that don't get resolved, but all the major important stuff is going to be fine. So, yeah, so it's good. So all that's fine. Let me, that's Dustin. I'm not sure. Okay, just a second. Hey buddy, what do you know? So I'm out recording a podcast at the moment, but as soon as I get back, we can figure out how we're going to shuffle things around. Maybe we'll try to combine the trip and pick up Aiden and then drop off the car all at the same time. Oh, okay. Okay.
Get my marks and stuff.
Okay.
Do you want me to just drop the red car off at your house and then you can pick up me?
Sure.
And I'll just drive the tan car.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's I think it's like you take each highway to Kearney, turn left.
Right.
It's
not quite to 65. You know where that Barnes cuts off to go to that subdivision back in there. It's like the first light you come to after you turn onto Kearney. It is to the left. It's in those shopping things. Google knows.
Sure, past it,
yeah.
I called that guy at some point because he goes to praise with me.
No, but, you know, he's a good guy, so.
Yeah, so I'm going to run in here to the HR.
Okay.
Desk or whatever and see if they've got this finished and then we'll just go double time it back to the house.
Okay. Yeah, and then I'll pick Aiden up, and I'll just meet you down there.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
All right.
I'll just leave. Where do you want me to put the keys?
Oh, you can just throw them on the floorboard. No one's going to bother it.
Yeah, no, that's true.
So yeah. Yep.
Now,
right, right.
Okay.
See you. Of course, now the question is this thing still recording? It is still recording. Okay, great. That's still recording. So we're going to put that up there. And this was still recording, although I will have probably clipped out the phone call because that went a little longer than I thought it was going to. But that's fine. So anyways, you know, doing a little... those last final things, you know, at this point, the writing on the final book may kind of shift into early March, which technically it's supposed to be done by March 1st, but you know, it's the last book. Like one of my beta readers said, look, there's not really a deadline here, Phil. And I was like, yep, you know, you're right, you're right. So, working on that. So both of those things are going well, and we'll get that stuff done. As far as what I've been thinking about this week, we had a really interesting experience this week at work, and I think we're going to see more of this. And I think AI is definitely going to energize this, and it's going to be fascinating to watch. The fact is that with a good group of consultants who know the AI tools and are able to apply them in ways that work, because part of my conversation with my buddy this morning was the fact that he has a boss that thinks he knows how to use AI, but doesn't really. His prompts aren't that good, and you know, he doesn't kind of edit what he gets back from AI, and so you know, it doesn't work out very well where my buddy knows how to do that stuff. And what he does turns up as being examples for the company. And then his boss is kind of bummed out about the fact, like, what are you doing different than I'm doing? You know, well, actually read through the stuff that AI produces and I have better prompts. And so I think for a consulting company that actually has people that do well with AI, I don't think there's any question that there can be a cadre of consultants that can do better than really any homegrown IT staff could. That wasn't the direct driver in the events of this last week, but I think it will be in the future, and it may play out to be that, even in the situation with headquarters, because it was announced this last week. Make sure you're here for the 11 o'clock meeting on Monday, but I wasn't necessarily supposed to be there because I'm a consultant. So, well, in that 11 o'clock meeting, on Monday, they talked about the fact that the entire IT staff, support people, hardware people, programmers, project managers, everybody, the entire staff, account support people, I mean, just everybody is going to be moved out of headquarters and absorbed by a company called Gloo, G-L-O-O. That was kind of jarring for the staff because no one told them that was coming. And basically they're all going to be made new offers and, you know, they'll be able to either accept the offer or accept a severance package from the assemblies. And then they're just all going to become Gloo employees. So that's interesting. And I've already talked with the big boss and he said, yeah, I've already talked to them about you and that your situation is unusual and, you know, you have knowledge of the systems and you're a great benefit to us. And said, so everything will stay the same, you know, same hourly rate that you charge, same 16 hours a week, blah, 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 blah. So it's supposedly at some point they are going to provide me an offer. And, you know, then I don't know that I will become a Gloo employee, but because I'm not really interested in that. But I will have a consulting contract with them. I'm assuming, I haven't talked to them yet, so I'm assuming I'll just have a consulting contract with them and basically just keep doing what I'm doing now. So that was really fascinating. And I expect to see more and more of those types of transitions as we keep moving along. And in fact, I had a conversation, or I was listening to a conversation that was a podcast on something that is called Milk Road AI. And they had as their guest, I'm walking up hills at this point, so the other way it's mainly downhill. And his name is Alexander Wissner Gross, or Gross, I'm not sure how we say that. He's affectionately referred to as AWG. Very intelligent man. You know, very much a complexity scientist and an AI entrepreneur, and has a really interesting take on things. He is part of the whole Moonshots podcast. And every week, you know, people are waiting to hear his takes on things. And it's fascinating. So they had him on. And he was talking about what he sees as the future for all of this stuff. Now, I will tell you, you know, I had a conversation with my buddy this morning. He's in tech. He uses AI. You know, I use AI, I mean, but we don't think it's quite ready for prime time yet, but there's new versions coming out all the time and it's never going to be worse than it is right now. And the fact of the matter is it's useful right now and it's only going to get better. So AWG's viewpoint is that we are, I'm trying to hold my notes and the wind is blowing them. AWG's viewpoint is that we are in an economic singularity. We are rapidly approaching that point. Man, it's windy. Where AI doesn't just improve productivity, but fundamentally rewires how value, labor, capital, and even money itself function. And, you know, he says this isn't hype, it's a structural analysis. And now I need to turn my page. I don't have enough hands. And so, you know, he spent some time talking about, well, what is this economic singularity? And he says a technological singularity refers to runaway intelligence growth. An economic singularity refers to runaway value creation, where intelligence becomes so abundant and inexpensive that the economic assumptions of scarcity start breaking down. And he says, you know, historically, the economic revolutions were driven by new energy sources. So you had steam power that really birthed the Industrial Revolution. You had electricity that gave rise to mass production. You had oil that gave rise to global logistics and mobility. And you had the internet that spawned the information economy. And in his terminology, goodness, lots of wind. In his terminology, we may now be entering an intelligence revolution. But he said, here's the key distinctions. Electricity made physical labor cheaper. AI makes cognitive labor cheaper. And in his estimation, that changes everything. Again, let me turn the page. And he said, if reasoning, analysis, coding, writing, design, and planning can be automated at near zero marginal cost, then the structure of the work itself transforms. Because we're not talking about automating repetitive factory tasks anymore. We're talking about automation of decision making, which is an interesting idea. So when you look at intelligence as a commodity, that is fundamentally different than anything that we've experienced before. I'm going to duck into the garage here and then we'll finish this up. Because there's a little bit of a windbreak inside. So hopefully, between my phone and the recorder, we're actually going to get something we can use this week. Let me just set this stuff down here. And down here. And hopefully these guys will be happy sitting here. Yeah, he said, so for most of history, I should probably shut the door. For most of history, intelligence has been scarce. Experts were rare, education was expensive, strategy and optimization required humans. Now it's too dark, I can't see my notes. But AI turns intelligence into infrastructure. So you don't hire a genius, you rent one by the token. What is interesting is that the inference cost, how much it costs you to actually put through a query to AI, keeps dropping. And it keeps dropping to the point that we end up in a situation where every person has access to the human, superhuman analytical power. Every company has 24/7 strategists. every workflow becomes optimized continuously. And AWG suggests that once intelligence becomes abundant like this, it compounds. AI systems design better AI systems, optimization improves optimization, capital allocation accelerates. Then you get into this feedback loop, which we're close to that now, if we haven't already entered it, because now we have AI systems that are designing our new AI systems, and they are accelerating that process. So where we start breaking down is that we have a collapse of traditional economic assumptions, because there isn't labor scarcity anymore, because AI can handle legal drafting, software engineering, marketing copy, financial modeling, research, et cetera, et cetera. And so the supply of effective labor explodes. And when that happens, the price drops. So you have high cognitive work becomes dramatically cheaper. And so he envisions a startup with maybe 3 human founders and 50 AI agents, and the company operates like a 200-person team. And the margins increase, and the time to market collapses, and the iteration cycles shrink. It's nonlinear acceleration. So it's going to be really interesting to see what happens, because if all of this moves forward, AWG doesn't necessarily see this as AI replacing humans, but he sees it as AI changes the leverage that humans have, and humans shift from doing tasks to directing systems, and the premium moves towards judgment, taste, and vision, and ethical reasoning, and strategic design. In other words, he's very optimistic. You know, he's very optimistic about where things are going to go now. Oh, I don't know that I am as optimistic as he is, because of what's in the human heart and the way that behaves. But we'll see. I mean, he's basically talking about the cost of labor going to zero, the cost of energy going to zero, the cost of making decisions and running the business going to zero. But I have seen too much of how easily humans are distracted to not be concerned about what happens to these humans who are engaged in all of this abundance, especially if some government decides that the answer to all of this is just to give people money so that they can be alive. People have said, oh, it's going to be so wonderful because there'll be so many new artists and so many people being creative and stuff. But it's not necessarily what I see, because right now we live in an attention economy and everybody's glued to their phones. And if there's no reason for them to have to go work, even if when they are needing to work, a lot of people are staring at their phones. And so if they don't have to work, I don't see any reason why they wouldn't just keep staring at their phones and keep doom scrolling and keep being distracted by all of these things that are just trying to divide us. So it is certainly an interesting time to be alive. And it's certainly a very, very interesting progression that we are going to move through in the next few months. So, and years. So hopefully the meters seem to be moving correctly on this stuff. Hopefully we actually got a podcast this time. This is Phil Ferrand, and I have walked around and made it home.